Officials with the Thunderbird School of Global Management at ASU had a busy time at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland last month. For one thing, the school released a report estimating the economic benefits of climate restoration in the trillions of dollars. It also helped lead a conversation about developing rules of the road for technologies of the so-called Fourth Industrial Revolution. That covers things like machine learning and artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, and blockchain, among others. With me to talk about both of these areas is Sanjeev Kagram, Director General and Dean of the Thunderbird School of Global Management. And Sanjeev, let's start with the research into economic opportunities for climate restoration. Where are the biggest opportunities there?
Let me frame it in the following way. There are three critical pillars in the efforts to address climate change. The first is what we conventionally talk about, which is climate mitigation. There are a whole set of opportunities in that have been talked about again and again and again. It's about scaling them, the energy transition being the most important one, solar, wind, so forth and so on, electric vehicles, one can go on. The second is climate adaptation. The climate has changed. There's no reversing that. Now, there is, interestingly enough, and incredible economic opportunities when it comes to climate adaptation. Creating smart infrastructure, for example, that can withstand these extreme weather events that are going to happen actually has a huge benefit cost analysis. The third critical piece is what some people call climate restoration. Some people call carbon removal. The idea is that even if we do really well, and we have to, climate mitigation and adaptation, that's not sufficient because we've already put a ton of CO2, carbon dioxide, in the air. We have to take that carbon out of the atmosphere. That's the exciting new opportunities in terms of answering your question in terms of market opportunities. How can we do that? It turns out there's a whole set of natural and technological solutions that are coming online that have financial benefits as well as those climate removal or carbon removal.
Especially in the realm of climate restoration or whatever experts want to call it, to some extent, is that almost akin to making lemonade out of lemons? I mean, there's the situation where there's too much CO2 in the air.
Yeah.
We can't put the genie back in the bottle here, so let's just try to make the best of it.
That's right. That's exactly a great metaphor to use. It's already in the atmosphere. And as I said, even if, and we have to, reduce our net contributions, we want to go to net zero, right? We're not going to get there today, but we have to get to net zero.
So do you think that these efforts are mostly going to come from private companies? Do you imagine that they have to be done in collaboration with private entities, public entities, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So what we called for, we had a major event at the World Economic Forum in Davos. The theme of the World Economic Forum was on sustainability. With respect to these set of opportunities, we need a new, and we called for a new global institution on carbon removal or climate restoration that brings together the public sector, the private sector, and the nonprofit sector with academic institutions to really catalyze and propel these solutions. That's absolutely needed. It's got to be a collaboration.
Well, how much for especially private companies comes down to it looks good to investors, it looks good to customers if a company is seen as trying to help the environment take its CO2 out of the air? And how much of it actually makes good economic and fiscal sense for them to actually do it?
Well, it's certainly the former, but the exciting thing about this set of possibilities is the latter, is that they can, you know, even if they are doing it just because, you know, they have a bottom line, they want to maximize their revenues, they want to maximize their shareholder value, we're good with it because it actually is a win-win. And that's what's exciting about this set of opportunities.
So let me ask you about something else that you were presenting last month in Davos at the World Economic Forum, looking at the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And it sounds like you're trying to organize some kinds of rules of the road for how all of this stuff has to be managed and governed.
So we launched a white paper. It was on how do we think about the policies, rules, norms that govern these emerging technologies. Now, our listeners and everyone is concerned about our privacy and many other issues, safety around these emerging technologies. They're moving so quickly. Individual governments, whether they be at the local level, the state level, the national level, or at the international level, haven't figured out how to do this. So we produced a paper, it's called Global Technology Governance, that really looked at what is the evolution, of these policies, regulations, laws, to make sure that we do two things for these emerging technologies, that we make sure we minimize the risks and costs. But because we believe that these have incredible economic, social, environmental opportunities, this is something we should seize, enable them to be successful at scale. So it's both, it's a both and for us. The second thing, though, is how do we make sure that we really deploy these fourth IR technologies? So here we had a second event at the World Economic Forum in Davos, really pushing the frontier on how we could leverage these new technologies for the social good, for the public good.
With all of the various types of technologies and to some extent competing interests, do you get the sense that there can be some kind of compromise or agreement on what the rules should be for using and not using these types of technologies?
Well, I have to say that we at the Thunderbird School of Global Management for over 70 years have believed that not only is it a compromise, but that creative ingenuity can lead to win-win solutions. We really believe that if we bring stakeholders, groups together across these sectors, that we have a common purpose, which is the social benefit of our communities and our citizens. And we know that creative ingenuity and solutions are possible that will make it win-win. It's not just going to be a compromise where we have to go to a lowest common denominator. There's a great, great future possible for all of us.
What do you imagine the give and take will look like? Because not everybody is going to want the same things or think the same rules should apply or think that technologies can and should be used in the same way. So how do you envision that give and take, that negotiation to reach that kind of compromise going?
Well, as with all of these types of public-private partnerships and or multi-stakeholder as sort of collaborative initiatives, it starts with recognizing that there are legitimate interests of all the different parties. When we start from there, it's surprising how quickly we can move to, as I said, to win-win solutions. Now, will there be inevitable trade-offs? Absolutely. But what we've experienced in these projects and initiatives, as well as, you know, for years and years, is that if we could bring these win-win victories together, then that creates a social trust amongst the different parties. And so then the inevitable trade-offs become easier to do.
It almost sounds like you're saying that what's really needed is maybe not specific, too detail-oriented policies and rules, but maybe broad frameworks that newer technologies and evolving technologies can fit into.
Absolutely. And look, where we've moved to in regulation is that back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, we had this notion of command and control. The government would set the rules, and they knew what was right, and then the private sector and others, you know, could get to work and create value. And if they didn't follow through and they didn't comply, then they would be punished. Right? Well, we know that things are moving too quickly and it's much more complex than now in the 21st century. So we still need government to set rules. But imagine a world in which the government set the minimum. We are not going below this threshold. And if you do, we're going to punish you. But the government, with other stakeholders, the private sector, the public sector, the nonprofit sector, academics, said, look, what we really want to do is get to this. We want to get to all the possibilities of maximizing these new technologies. And we then create this, what's called a kind of ratcheting up process, right? We want to create those types of incentives that help everyone do good and do well.
All right. That is Sanjeev Kagram. He is the Director General and Dean for the Thunderbird School of Global Management at ASU. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you so much for the time.